This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not-so-nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in Illinois, discussing a mysterious death in a small town.
Then, we'll talk about a gruesome murder that may have resulted in the wrong man being put behind bars. Buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Prairie State.
Thou doth protest too much. Act 3, Scene 2 of Shakespeare's Hamlet indicates that someone is only denying something so persistently because the opposite is actually true. Have you ever been accused of doing something that you didn't do? How did you react? Did you get mad? Yell and swear it wasn't you? Anytime there are accusations thrown around, it can be infuriating. This can cause you, your reputation, respect, career, partner, and sometimes your freedom. Being accused of lying or cheating, even stealing, and trying to prove your innocence can sometimes be hard to do. Now imagine you're being accused of murder, but not just any murder, the murder of your spouse. Statistics show that between 1989 and 2018, more than 2,372 people were wrongfully accused of crimes. 151 people in 2018 alone. In 2019, 143 people were exonerated, over half of them convicted of homicide. Three of those were on death row. To date, approximately 150 innocent people have been executed. As of January 2020, the Innocence Project has documented over 375 DNA exonerations in the United States. 21 of those were sentenced to death. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers out to you. I'm just trying to show you how many times people get it wrong. Snap judgments, mistaken eyewitness identifications, even skeezy jailhouse informants have led to convictions and sometimes executions of innocent people. False and misleading forensic science have screwed them over too. The case I'm going to tell you about is one of these. One of these where a person is arrested and forced to stand trial for a murder they did not commit. Just another statistic to us, but the difference between freedom and prison to another. This is the story of Curtis and Corey Lovelace. Curtis Lovelace and Corey Diedrichsen went to high school together. They had some mutual friends, but the two didn't date. Once he came home from college on a break, and the two ran into each other and hit it off. Corey told all of her friends that he was the one. She also told her mother that she had met the man she was going to marry. Curtis was a football star at the University of Illinois. He was an All-American boy. He joined the National Guard and went on to study law, eventually becoming a prosecutor. But that would come later. Corey and Curtis married in 1991. Corey worked and supported the two while Curtis studied law. They bought a house in Quincy, Illinois, just two houses down from her parents. Before long, Curtis became a prosecutor in the Adams County State's Attorney's Office and was president of the school board and taught part-time at a local community college. He did a business law class.
He was busy.
The two went on to have four children, a little girl named Lindsay in 1993, then three little boys. Corey was a stay-at-home mom and loved every minute of it. She did PTA and all the things that stay-at-home moms do. The weekend before Valentine's Day in 2006, Corey wasn't feeling well. She had flu-like symptoms and was vomiting, but she managed to get her kids' Valentine's cards and Valentine's boxes together because that's what mamas do.
Wow.
So that Sunday night, Corey and Lindsay curled up on the couch and watched the Winter Olympics together. Tuesday was Valentine's Day, and Curtis had canceled his morning class to help the kids get up for school because Corey was still feeling like shit. So Corey comes down that morning and sees the kids off, make sure they have all their Valentine's things for their parties at school and whatnot. Curtis helped his wife back to bed, and he left to take the kids to school. So Dad takes the three oldest to school. The youngest one was still asleep. He was like four. So he's gone just long enough to drop them off, and when he gets back, the house is quiet. He figures Corey's went back to sleep. She's not feeling good. And Lawson, the little one, was, no, he just hadn't woken up yet. So he quietly checks his emails in the kitchen before going upstairs to shower and get ready for work. So he peeks in the bedroom to check on Corey, but something didn't look right. She was pale. So he goes over to her, calls her name, shakes her, but nothing. So he knows at this point she's dead. So Curtis picks up Larson, their youngest, takes him over to the grandparents' house, which is right down the street. Corey's mom answers the door, and he hands over the little boy and mumbles something about people are coming and Corey is dead, and then just leaves. So he's just very blunt, like, here, take him. Corey's dead. There's people coming. He goes back to his house and calls his boss, not 911, not the police. Calls his boss, tells him he's not coming in, that he just found Corey dead.
What?
Yeah. So his boss calls 911, but I mean, maybe he was in shock.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he just wasn't thinking. I don't know. So police get to the house. They head straight upstairs to the bedroom. The coroner was already there, and her body was still warm to the touch, which means she hadn't been dead that long, like within the last hour. Right. So. There was no sign of a struggle in the bedroom. There's no marks on her body except for a small red mark under her nose. But her arms are positioned strangely, like hovering midair, not by her side. Like, like her elbows were, I'm showing Lacey.
like a T-Rex arms.
Almost like T-Rex arms. Like her wrists are, she's doing a Zach. Our friend Zach, he does his hands like this. Yeah. But she's laying flat.
Almost like petrified
in
place.
So it looks like rigor mortis has set in.
But with her arms slightly up, that's weird.
So she's flat on her back, elbows on the bed, and so her arms are sticking up.
Okay.
Like T-Rex arms almost. Yeah. But flat. Anyways, police notice a styrofoam cup beside the bed, and it smells like alcohol. Curtis tells them it's probably vodka and tonic. We like to drink, and we probably drink too much. Curtis said sometimes this impacted her ability to take care of things at home, and she was also battling bulimia, he says.
Oh, gosh.
He says that, you know, this has honestly kind of taken a toll on our marriage.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, stop talking. You're saying too much. Anyways, neighbors would also report later on that they had heard shouting from the house from time to time, but maybe she was just screaming at her kids.
I mean,
they had four. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah.
They had three boys. I have one, and I scream at him like a lunatic sometimes. That's the only way they listen.
Max, is that you?
Is that you?
Is that a stranger?
Is that a stranger? So Curtis is cooperating and answering all the questions. Mm-hmm. So eventually the interview is complete and police leave. So everyone in town at this point has started to wonder what in the world happened to Corey.
Yeah.
38-year-old women just do not die in their sleep.
I hope not.
So pathology takes over, and they said that there was some sort of small trauma to her lip and inside her mouth, but nothing major. They also noted fatty liver, which is usually caused from drinking too much, and can cause sudden death. The ME ruled her death as undetermined, which is very unusual, but it does happen.
Yeah.
And the case is closed. Corey is cremated per her family's request.
Okay.
And a month later, Corey's father would pass away from cancer. So this family's really been going through it. So a few months later, six to be exact, Curtis starts dating this woman named Erica, one of his former students.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Don't like that.
They bumped into each other at a nightclub. Erica and her daughter eventually move in with Curtis and his four children. Lindsay, the daughter, did not get along with Erica, and eventually she moved out and moved in with her grandparents. Because she's just, you know, she lost her mama.
That's a lot of stuff.
She's the only daughter. That's her mother. Yeah. Now you have this other woman and her daughter move in, and she's like, fuck this. I'm going to live with my grandma. So 2 years after living together, they get married. But This rebound relationship would not last, and after 5 years of marriage, Curtis files for divorce. So at this point, it's 2013. But he wouldn't stay single for very long.
Oh.
He reconnects with his high school homecoming date, Christine, on Facebook. Not long after the two start dating, and 6 months later, they were married.
Dude.
Damn. But Lindsay loved her. And they all got along. Christine and Curtis were happy. Their mm-hmm. life was cruising along effortlessly. She adopted the three boys wow. and, like, raised them as her own children. She didn't have any children. And so they were just, like, they were a family again.
It was a good match.
It was a great match. Everybody loved Christine. Hmm. Even Corey's family loved Christine.
That's good.
So one day, 8 years after Corey's death, a new detective was pulling up old case files boy. When he pulled Curtis's case out.
Mm-hmm.
He knew him from working at the state's attorney's office. So he was like, I guess, being nosy.
That's what exactly. I would do. I'm like, oh,
I was
yeah,
like,
I
oh,
would
yeah,
do that.
I gotta check this out. So he looks the case up, reads the report and the statements from Curtis, the autopsy summary, looks at some of the photos, and he sees the autopsy was classified as undetermined. So there were things that were, I guess, suspicious or, you know, like traumatic findings, like the red mark on her lip and the cut inside her mouth. So he goes through the pictures and he sees the way that her hands are positioned.
Mm-hmm.
And that raises some red flags for him. He's like, this is not normal. Like this, she's T-Rex arms. That's not, no, like floating midair. So to him, this proves that she must have died hours before they originally thought. So he goes to his superior. And they are like, we've not ever seen these photos. So police go back to the pathologist and have her re-examine the case.
Wow.
But she will not alter her findings. She says no.
Well, also, she was warm to the touch.
Yeah. 2-3 people mm-hmm. verified that she was. And so the ME is like, no,
yeah.
I'm not changing this. This is what I found. This is what it is. They can't do another autopsy because Corey has mm-hmm. been cremated. So they hire a new pathologist to review the autopsy notes. They also decide to re-interview anyone else that knew the couple back then. And the case is officially opened back up. Lindsay's questioned again. At this point, she's 20 years old and in college. And she tells them the same thing that her dad did. Mom was up that morning. She helped us get ready for our Valentine's Day school parties. They ask her about her parents' relationship. She says things were great. Like, we never heard them fight. Like, everything was fine. So the new pathologist is going over the report, and she said she thinks the death of Corey had to be between 11 to 12 hours before.
What?
So basically the night before. She also thinks that something must have been stuck underneath Corey's arms when she died, and that's why her arms are stuck like that. She said the cuts on her mouth suggest suffocation, and she rules this as a homicide. But there's no defensive wounds anywhere. There's no bruising. There's no petechiae. There's nothing showing
like
that this is a homicide. She's basically saying, like, maybe he stuck a pillow over her face, and that's why her arms are like that, is because she was, like, fighting and he left her like that. And that's why her arms are T-Rexed.
Oh, okay.
So was he just given a pass because he was an attorney and a pillar of the community? Guess not, because in August of 2014, Curtis was arrested for the murder of his wife.
Wow. He actually, wow.
That's literally the only thing they had to arrest him on is what that pathologist
That's
said.
That's so strange to me. Did the original one give an explanation for the arms?
No.
The explanation makes sense, but to just say, okay, it's a homicide from that's kind of wild.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He is questioned and he tells them he doesn't remember a lot about that day other than finding her dead. I mean, he was in shock. And this was also back in 2000 whatever. So I don't know, maybe. Trauma can cause you to block some things out.
Oh. Trust me, I know.
I mean,
yeah, no.
My grandfather was killed in a car accident when I was like 13, and it was very traumatic mm-hmm. for our entire family. But I couldn't tell you 10 things that happened that day. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Other than the fact that he died. I mean, granted, I didn't find him. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's it's
so,
that's very true.
I mean, who knows? So they ask him if he smothered his wife, and he says no. He's indicted anyways. They question the children. The youngest son says he went to wake his mother up, and she wouldn't wake up. But now he was 4 at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just pointing this out. The other two boys said, no, she was up. We spoke to her and we talked about X, Y, and Z. Like they remembered having a conversation with her. So at this point, Lindsay is estranged from her family.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not sure why. I don't want to speculate.
Yeah.
So Curtis is arrested and charged with murder and he pleads not guilty. In 2016, his trial begins, and he is facing up to 60 years in prison. So the prosecution brings up the fact that he did not call 911, that he was very blunt about her death to her mother. He did not attempt CPR. The neighbors testified to them fighting. Then they bring up the smothering theory, saying that he smothered her the night before and left her like that until the morning when he removed the pillow. Because it was evidence, and that her arms stuck like that because rigor mortis had set in. I mean, they're strictly speculating.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they're speculating a lot of this. And I could see, I mean, you hear, well, why didn't he give her CPR? But if you're looking like that, and let's say we don't know if she had her eyes open or closed, but he could probably take a look at her and be kind of realize,
right? But my
she's
thing,
not alive.
But my thing is she's pale and stuff, but she's still warm.
Yeah, that's strange to me.
I don't know. So Lindsay gets on the stand and she says she isn't sure that she saw her mother that morning.
Oh no,
she was just repeating what she was told, and that she doesn't remember a lot about this day. Now she was 12 at the time.
Yeah, I mean,
so I think it's important to point that out.
She might really not remember.
Well, and there were also 2 days between when the death happened and when they interviewed the children.
Ugh.
2 days. So I could see they could get very easily confused.
Yeah.
Dad's telling them, you know, don't you remember mom got up and made breakfast for you guys? You know, what day was that? I mean, Max says all the time, you know, he'll tell me, so-and-so did this yesterday night. That's what he calls it. I'm like, Cooper said that to me yesterday night. And I'm like, it's the weekend. You haven't seen Cooper since school on Friday. But you see what I'm saying? He gets days mixed up. And I don't...
It's hard to go back 8 years when you were a child. And
well, and I don't want to discount children when it comes to trials. But, I mean, hell, adults forget stuff.
They need to be interviewed right away.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. So, the picture of the body being in rigor was determined years after, not that day.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That's, ugh.
Yeah. And that doesn't prove that Curtis did anything at all. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, her arms being like that does not, that is not physical evidence tying him to a murder or making that a crime scene.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? There's no other evidence besides that cut on her lip. But that doesn't prove suffocation.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, she could have bit her lip or hit it on something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they didn't
She could have a fever blister that's healing.
Yeah, they didn't get any, like, particles from fabrics
nothing.
In her nose or anything.
No petechiae, nothing. No defense wounds, no bruising, nothing under her fingernails. Nothing. Not a thing.
Hmm.
I mean, there were 2 police officers that did testify that confirmed that her body was still warm to the touch.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have rigor with a warm body.
Yeah.
Like, that only happens a few hours after death, starting with the facial muscles and then spreading to the limbs over the next few hours, and is usually complete in about 6 to 8 hours, for those of you that were curious about rigor mortis. So, the jury was 6 guilty, 6 innocent, and this was declared a mistrial.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, which means, do you know what that means? I had to consult an attorney.
Gosh, I did at one point. I don't remember now.
So, basically, they can release him and then literally walk up to him after he's released and rearrest him and charge him with murder again. So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. That doesn't prove that you're innocent. It doesn't mean you walk free. They can rearrest you and retry you and charge you again.
Right. Isn't it typically normal? Well, not normal. I don't know.
People
want more maybe evidence, and they're like, okay, well, we'll try to find mm-hmm. something else and then mm-hmm. arrest him again or that
sure.
kind of thing.
Not yeah. always. It's always going to be hanging over you.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
any point, mm-hmm. you can be rearrested.
Ugh.
So they go to trial to clear his name. The Exoneration Project hears about this case and takes it on pro bono. So they're basically trying to prevent a wrongful conviction, yeah. even though he has not been convicted yet, which is unusual for them. It's usually people who have been convicted and are up for like a retrial. So that's usually their cases. But they heard about this one and were like, you know what? Let's try to prevent it. So Curtis bonds out with money that people helped raise. And at this point, he had been sitting in jail for 2 years. Now, this is an attorney who worked for the state's attorney's office and was sitting in jail for 2 years.
Wow.
So the trial was moved 2 hours away. They did a change of venue and began March of 2017. Curtis's second wife, Erica, testifies in this trial. She said that he was an alcoholic and was physically abusive towards her. She also said that he once told her that, quote, she was writhing underneath me.
Huh?
She said that he brushed it off when she asked him about it. So, like, he just was talking to her and was like, she was writhing underneath me. And she's like, what? And he's like, what? Upon cross-examination, she went down a whole list with the defense of things that he did, like he was poisoning her and a bunch of other stupid shit, which basically made her look crazy. And they set her up to make her look like this.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They would just keep agging her on, like, oh, do you think he did this? Yeah, I definitely did.
Oh,
do you think
I see
he,
what
about
saying.
This? Do you think he would do this? Oh, I'm sure he would.
Mm-hmm.
So it made her look crazy and like she just wanted him punished for divorcing her.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Which made her not a great witness for them.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? Maybe he did do those things. We don't know.
Yeah.
But it drives me insane that lawyers gaslight people on the stand like this.
I don't like that either.
But it's the tricks of the trade.
You're allowed, yeah.
You're allowed. So the biggest shock of all during the trial, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to light your fucking hair on fire. An EMT is called to the stand to testify. And when asked, he says, I moved Corey's arms when I got there.
What?
To check for her heartbeat and do other life-saving measures before the photos were taken.
What?
So he was like,
oh,
no, wait, I did that.
Gosh.
I moved her arms.
Oh.
Next, the detectives were brought to the stand and questioned.
Oh, my.
And he said, I was not aware that this EMT had moved her arms before the photos were taken. And the defense attorney was like, sir, these photos were the sole reason
mm-hmm.
that this case was opened back up. And he was like, yeah. And now we find out.
Oh, my Lord.
After all these years that this man sat in prison, that her arms are like this because the EMT moved them that way? Are you fucking kidding me?
I've been going through my mind, okay, what can make her arms like that? What? I was going to Google it after this. I cannot. Oh, my Lord.
2 years, 3 years.
The whole case was reopened for the arms.
For the arms that the EMT said, oh, no, I did that. So 7 days of this trial, the jury comes back with a non-guilty verdict after 2 hours. 11 years
Jeez.
After her death, this man could have been convicted and spent the rest of his life in prison or been charged. I mean, like, murder? You had children.
And,
it's insane.
And the fact that they went back to, I understand that if something is really weird, you want a different opinion, but
it's
terrifying to know you even, he had privilege.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh.
He was an attorney.
Wow.
He wasn't fucking stupid.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Was being charged with, yeah. So the family
Holy
moves
crap.
Out of Quincy and start their own exoneration firm named
wow.
the Lovelace Center for Criminal Defense. Is it Urbana?
I don't
That's
know.
Where they, anyways. They also moved his practice to Chicago.
Okay.
So what do you think?
Is that detective his arch nemesis now?
Oh, my God.
I
I would.
Somebody would catch hands. Then I would. Then I would be in jail for real for assault and battery.
Oh my gosh! That
all that money, all that time that man sat in prison for one EMT to go. Oh no, I did that. What are you talking about? No, I had to do that.
Thank God they found that guy.
Yeah,
he would have. I don't know. I mean, maybe been sentenced.
It we don't know the outcome. How many times? Do people not have the best attorneys or the best knowledge?
Oh, or a public defender.
A public – or somebody who – not that we hate public defenders. No, I know a lot of them, and you guys are fantastic, and you're doing the Lord's work.
Yes, yes, yes. It's just they don't have
Right, right. No, you're 100% right. But I think maybe she had a seizure. I mean, she was sick, and that would explain the injuries to her mouth. Like, maybe she bit her tongue or bit her lip. I don't know.
Yeah, that's –
I can't stop thinking about the fact that this man could have went to prison for the rest of his life for the murder of his wife.
Gosh.
All because – I mean, and some Barney Fife cop was
how
like,
did
foul,
even find
foul
this?
Play, foul play. He must have murdered her because her arms look weird.
That is
– what?
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-mm. But it makes you go, how – I mean,
no,
seriously,
really.
There are so many people – like all the numbers I read off to you of people who have been exonerated.
It's scary.
It's terrifying. You're not innocent until proven guilty. You are guilty until, I mean, and just like the case you covered, what was it last week where the guy had the girl had panties on with her brother's semen?
Oh.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Had that be a different situation, they would have been like, you're a fucking liar. Mm-hmm. You can't lie about DNA.
Yeah.
And it was found at the scene.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
Things can always mean something else.
There's the electric chair. Take a seat.
That's so messed
it's
up.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it is. Ugh.
Anyways, let's take a break.
Let's.
To process this.
For sure.
On the fence about joining Patreon? Let us tell you about some of the fun things this includes. Each month, you club members will get an extra episode where we will update you on previously covered cases, true crimes in the headlines, and a suggested spooky, murdery, or all-around weird something we've read, watched, or are currently binging.
With your membership, you will also get Patreon-exclusive merch, as well as videos of some episodes that we record. So how do you join? Go to patreon.com/UnitedStatesOfMurder and select which membership you'd like to join. After joining, we will give you a shout out on an upcoming episode, we'll mail you some stickers, and all of our content will be available to you.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
So we got an email about this case almost a year ago. You'll probably kind of remember it. I wasn't quite
probably
sure
not.
How to tackle it. And you'll all see why later. So I'm pretty much just going to try to present this in an unbiased manner. It'll make more sense later. In 1997, Connie Wagner was just 19 years old and living in Palatine, Illinois. Friends described her as fun and upbeat. Neighbors said she was nice, but had a short temper. I mean, plenty of people have short tempers.
I'm not, you know.
On June 20th, 1997, Connie's dad, Gary Wagner, went home and found her murdered in their townhouse. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a lot of stuff about Connie. I like to try to do that, but there wasn't a whole lot out there on who she was. Well, he immediately called police, and the investigation was underway. So this is a pretty brutal murder. Connie was bound with a telephone cord and stabbed over 180 times. So based on the scene, they believe she put up quite a bit of a fight and that there was a significant struggle because blood spatter was on the ceiling, hair was underneath her fingernails, blood was tracked throughout the home, and the tracks went all the way upstairs where bloody fingerprints were on a phone and a notepad in Connie's brother's room.
Wait, how many times was she stabbed?
180.
Holy shit, and hair under her fingernails?
Yeah. So there's, it seems like plenty of evidence is here, you would think. Well, the police were also able to lift fingerprints from the screen door, a newspaper clipping that was located between the couch cushions, and a plastic bag in the bathroom sink. They thought that might have been the assailants because it seemed out of place. Makes sense. Oh, and there was a blanket with a bloody shoe print on it.
Mm-mm, I don't like any of this.
Yeah. What police immediately found odd was that there was no sign of a forced entry. She lived in a townhouse, so neighbors were really close by, but none of them heard or saw anything. They also didn't remember anyone leaving the home. Connie's car was missing, so whoever did this could have used it as a getaway vehicle. Later that day, the car was found abandoned at those same townhome apartments. The area was checked earlier that day, so it seemed like someone drove it back after the fact. Unless someone just really missed it. But, mm-mm. Yeah. Police spoke to neighbors, friends, and family to learn more about her life and who may have committed this crime. They did learn that Connie was a regular user of marijuana and cocaine. She allegedly got her drugs from a local street gang that was known for its violence. From one article I read, she was allegedly frequently in debt to her dealers and would sometimes need to pawn her belongings to pay these debts. I'm saying allegedly a lot because I don't want to wrongly accuse her of anything. I'm not shaming her or whatever, but
I mean, last time I checked, people that smoke pot or do cocaine does not mean right. You should be brutally stabbed and murdered. Who right. gives a shit?
If a street gang was involved and she bought drugs, that's important.
It's not a good look.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not anybody I'd want to be.
Exactly, maybe. So, Palatine, so it's a suburb of Chicago. I did a little digging into what that town was like. Fun fact, this is where Vicki Gunvalson from The Real Housewives of the O.C.
the
is from.
OG?
Yes, the OG. I tried to get a hold of her, ask her opinion. I couldn't get past her publicist.
Bitches.
I know. So currently, the crime grade is that of an A- on crimegrade.org. In 2021, it ranked as 14th out of 50 as the safest city in Illinois. That being said, there are gangs there. It's a suburb of Chicago. And I found an article from 2010 about issues with rivaling high school gangs. And I was able to find an article from 1998 about gang-related murders in the city. So around the time of Connie's murder, street gangs were a legitimate concern in the area.
I mean, I don't want to...
Oh, I know. Well, one gang-related murder in particular in 1998 stood out to me because two men were meeting for a drug deal. They were robbed, tied up with duct tape, beaten, tossed into a bathtub, strangled with a rope. And I'll link up the article. But that goes to show you that gangs can be very violent. It can look like a crime of passion sometimes. I don't know if it's to torture someone or I don't really know the reasoning behind it. I don't know a lot about gang murders, but that's a lot of work to murder someone, you know? It's almost like they're doing it just for the thrill of it. I don't know.
No, it sounds like it.
Well, Connie also recently went through a breakup. In fact, just a few days before her murder, she broke up with her boyfriend of several months named Joe Stock, who was living in nearby Elk Grove Village. This made investigators suspect him first. He's the ex-boyfriend, of course, and they thought it seemed like a crime of passion since she was stabbed so many times. Allegedly, on the evening before her murder, she told Joe she was moving to Texas, and I didn't see an exact timeline of their relationship anywhere. Most articles said several months, so I'm assuming less than a year, maybe not even half a year, but I don't know for sure. So police called Joe in for an interview, like the day of. Despite the bloody scene, Joe did not have a drop of blood on him, his clothes, or his belongings. They even went to his house and got other pairs of shoes to test. He had no scratches on his body. He also gave police an alibi. He said that morning he had ridden with his mom and sister to the train station where they parked and boarded a train together heading downtown. He said that he rode with them for at least 15 minutes before getting off as they continued on about their day. At this point, according to him, he was at least 15 miles from the crime scene and without his car. Police photographed his body and collected the clothes he was wearing the day of the crime. They didn't have any evidence to hold him on, so he was allowed to go home. The DNA results came back. Believe it or not, they did not match Joe Stock. So neither the fingerprints or the hair was traced back to him. The shoe prints didn't match any of his shoes. None of those things.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Not a thing.
None of it matched. They were stumped.
I'm stumped.
Until 3.5 months later, someone came forward. Alfonso Najera, who was a family friend of Joe's, was brought into the police department to tell them what he knew. He alleged that Joe called him and told him that he murdered Connie because he was angry. He signed the statement, and he also agreed to participate in a recorded phone call with Joe, in which he would try to elicit another confession. Well, the conversation didn't go the way police expected. Here's a portion of it. Joe: I mean, shit, you still believe me, don't you? Alfonso: Yeah, I believe you, dude. I believe you, man. I just want to make sure that you didn't say something to anybody else, and they come to court, and then... Joe: Then what? Alfonso: You didn't tell anybody anything else, you know what I'm saying. Because they come to court, and then I look like, you know. Joe: Tell anybody what? It's a bunch of shit, man. They ain't got nothing. I didn't do nothing. You know that. Alfonso: Yeah, I know. Joe: It's a bunch of shit. You know, and I know, my ass would have been in jail a long time ago if I was guilty. You know what I'm saying? Alfonso: It's just bullshit, man, you know? I got to miss work and shit. Joe: All it comes down to is, you know and I know that I didn't do this. You know and I know that I don't know who did or have any knowledge about the whole damn thing, and they just want to make a bust on somebody to make themselves look good, you know? All they're going to try to do is intimidate you and all that kind of bullshit. Alfonso: Hey man, I gotta get back to work, dude. Joe: And look at it that way. It's been over a year. I haven't run. I got nothing to run from. I didn't move. I didn't all of a sudden disappear, you know what I mean? If I was guilty, my ass would have took off, and I'm just sitting here waiting for them to find out what the deal is. Because I want to know who's responsible. Do you think I don't want to know? That's it. Alfonso: Well, I have to get back to business, you know. So that's the gist of it. And he didn't get a confession from him. He just kind of, it's weird because Alfonso kept wanting to get off the phone.
Yeah.
Like, I gotta go to work. He's trying to get a confession out of him, but he's like,
that doesn't make any sense.
And the more he's talking, he's like,
you would think he would want him to keep talking.
Keep talking. Yeah. And it's just like, he says, you know, I didn't do this. You know, and I know. And then he just kind of agrees with him, like, yeah, I know, I know. It's very strange that...
No.
And then they tried to get him to... they tried to wiretap him and do it in person, and he refused. So, I don't know. It's just kind of strange.
It's very strange.
So, one source did say Alfonso had a prior conviction in a case of lying to authorities, but I couldn't find the details. So, some felt like he was someone the police could pressure. Regardless, Alfonso's statement is what police used to arrest Joe. And then he went to trial for Connie's murder. So the state's theory of the case was that Joe was angry with Connie over their breakup, used a copy of her key to enter the house, killed her, changed into her brother's clothes, and drove off in her car. They did find his fingerprints in her car, but not bloody fingerprints or anything. You know, he had been in her car. The physical evidence in the home, the hair, the fingerprints, the footprints did not point to Joe. Prosecutors made the argument that Alfonso made statements that, quote, implied he was talking about the confession, even if he didn't directly say so. They were also allowed to only use certain portions of the transcript. For example, at one point they used the quote from Alfonso, quote, you didn't tell anybody else. But they didn't use Joe's response, tell anybody what.
What the f-
The jury wouldn't know that he never clarified or anything, so for some reason the defense was not allowed to bring up Joe's responses. So they use that snippet of the conversation, mm-hmm. which for a jury, you hear that and you're like, oh, well, yeah. Put two and two together. You can take anything out of context. They should have just had the entire thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
One sentence, you didn't tell anybody else?
That, no.
Well, Joe Stock was convicted of first-degree murder at the age of 27. He was sentenced to 90 years imprisonment and has to serve at least 45 until he's eligible for parole.
Oh, my God.
So Judge Thomas Fecarada Jr. said he was troubled by how Joe Stock was able to coolly stare at him and the family as they recounted their grief. You tortured that girl, he said. In response, Joe said, quote, as for expressing remorse for a crime I did not commit, I obviously cannot do that. I am innocent, and nothing you can say or do will change that. Connie's family members said they were disappointed that sentencing guidelines could allow Joe Stock to serve half the sentence. But they said they were heartened that he will serve time for the crime. I feel like we can finally start to move forward, said Gary Wagner Jr., the victim's brother. Joe Stock is currently working with the Innocence Project and attorney Kathleen Zellner, whose name you might recognize from Stephen Avery's case.
Stephen Avery.
Yeah, I tried but couldn't find any information on if they ran that DNA against anyone else
or this database or whatever. I hope they did, but I didn't read that anywhere. I feel like this would be a really good case for that show, Reasonable Doubt. I think it's, I don't know if it's on ID or Oxygen, but they look into cases like this and they try to figure out if the person's either truly innocent or maybe something was like really botched or messed up in the trial.
I watched that show.
Mm-hmm. I love that show.
I do too, but it gives me so much anxiety.
Yeah.
But there was one, I can't remember which state or the details of it, but it was a child. I think she was like 13. And there was duct tape found at the scene of a murder, and her fingerprints were on the duct tape. And it was like, they arrested her and charged her for murder, this little 13-year-old girl, and it was like a 6-foot big dude, and she's still in prison. Or jail, or whatever.
I mean, I'm sure I've seen
and it was like something to do with like maybe they were trying to tie a handyman that worked. She was being raised by her grandparents for her grandparents that also had access to the duct tape. Mm-hmm. So it was like, did she touch the? Anyways, but it's cases like that, like this, where it's like
she's so. Yeah,
it. I hate these. It hate these cases.
Well, right. So someone from Joe's team reached out to us about this case. And I went through their website, freejoestock.com.
Oh my gosh, now I remember.
Yeah, I was.
Now I remember.
I was torn on covering this case just because the family does believe he's guilty.
Right. And you don't want to be disrespectful.
I don't want to be disrespectful. And at the end of the day, Connie's dead. She's no longer with us.
Exactly.
She was brutally murdered. I don't want anything to be taken away from Connie. She was 19 years old. I wanted to tread lightly. I don't just want to be on here saying, oh, he's, of course it was a gang and this and that. I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know, but it just seems like if the DNA didn't match and this guy couldn't get a confession on recorded, like.
What do you have?
All they have is him saying, oh, yeah, well, he told me. That's it. And it scares me knowing someone's behind bars, regardless of if they're guilty or not. Feelings aside, it scares me that someone can be behind bars based on someone said something. That's it. That's terrifying.
It really
is.
That's
messed up. That should not be that way. I'm just, and I wasn't in the trial. I don't know what the jury saw, but ugh.
Mm-mm.
I don't know. But so they have a website called freejoestock.com and it has a lot of information. But I, of course, found the actual case documents and case notes to cross-reference things, you know, just to check out. But he has a big team behind him that believes he's innocent. So I have questions like, did they run the DNA against other people, the database?
Right. There's too many questions.
And how does none of that DNA match him? How did the shoe prints not even match?
But he's still in prison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's nauseating. Yeah. Nauseating.
And our source said that Joe is willing to correspond if we have any questions. At this point, I just wanted to get the case out there, pick your brain, pick our listeners' brain, see what y'all thought about it. Like I said, it's a fit for that show, Reasonable Doubt. I'm probably going to submit it after this because I can't help him. I don't know. Again, I don't know if he needs help. I don't know. But again, taking emotion out of it, is this enough to convict someone for 90 years?
No.
At the end of the day.
No, it's not.
Feelings aside, that's.
It's not.
That's. Ugh, it's messed up.
You don't just need a body sitting in prison.
Exactly. It needs to be the right person.
You need to be the right. Yeah.
So I just, stuff like this just really, ugh.
This week.
I know.
These cases.
These cases are rough. Well, we have good news because we have a couple of new patrons.
Okay.
Carly.
Hi, Carly.
Hi, Carly.
Thank you.
Carly, I sent you an email. And if you want some stickers, give us your address. You don't have to, but so I don't know what state she's from, but thank you, Carly.
Thanks, Carly.
And we have Christella L. from Texas.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes.
Christella.
I like that name.
I too.
I know. Thank you, Christella. Thanks for joining our weird and wonderful Patreon family. We're currently, our theme for May is cruise crime.
Summer vacations.
Vacations.
They're coming up. People are going to be doing some cruises, so we thought we would ruin it for you.
That's what I thought.
You're not escaping murder just because you're on a ship. Just saying.
Yeah. No, that's
true. It's everywhere. Murder never sleeps.
I think it'd be a murder mystery cruise would be really freaky.
No, I don't want to be, first of all.
No, like a...
I don't want to be on a cruise, period.
I know. I'm like, I'm never going to get her on a cruise after never. We do this episode.
No.
That's exactly I what I thought.
I feel like I would have anxiety.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Everything gives me anxiety.
Oh, remember I was talking about that key lime martini that I had at Charlie's a few weeks ago? Well, guess what?
What?
They have an official drink menu now.
What like is it on there?
With the cocktails. Yes, it's on it. What's, that's what made what me think
is
it? Of it.
What is it? Give it to us.
Well, gosh, I didn't take a picture of it, but they put all their secrets on there.
Oh, boy.
You'll have to go and grab one yourself. But
no, I'm not drinking that shit.
I know you're not. You're just going to get the same old, same old.
And the vodka.
I want to try all the drinks on the list except for the whiskey and bourbon ones.
Too old for that. I'll throw up. I can't throw up.
The last time I was there, I got the Raj Arnold Palmer.
Oh, well.
His own spin on the Arnold Palmer. But I got unsweet tea and lemonade. And it writes on there lots of vodka. And it was.
They are heavy-handed, and we are not mad about it.
Oh, so go check out Charlie's in the River Market. Grab a cocktail. See what you think of the key lime pie martini. In the meantime, what's new with you?
Nothing. Mother's Day's coming up.
It is.
This will come out after Mother's Day. So we hope you guys all had a good Mother's Day. Dog moms, cat moms, bird mom, fish mom, human mom. You're
you
still
can,
a mom.
You can have this one.
Have
you
it.
Can have this one.
have. You're all moms. You're a dog mom.
Oh.
You do a lot for your pets.
Yeah. Well, us people without children tend to go overboard sometimes.
Hey, you know what? You're still a mom to something.
Well, I hope you have a good weekend too. Are you? You're going out of town. You're not going out
possibly.
Of town.
Possibly.
This comes out after. They can't find you now.
No, I don't care. Please find me.
Find me now. Oh, you sent me a message about a scary movie that's coming out in June of this year.
No. It came out last year.
Are you kidding me?
No, which is why I texted Lacey at 10:30 last night. I was staying up with toothpicks in my eyeballs trying to stay awake to watch the Grizzlies game.
Oh, my
God. Yay, they won.
Sporty Spice.
P.S. They won.
Woohoo! Oh, my gosh.
No, it came out, I think it came out last year. Let me find this text message.
Yeah, find the text so we can tell y'all about it. If you've seen this movie, let us know. Let us know if it's worth watching or not.
It is called, what the hell, where is it?
Ethan Hawke's in it.
He is in it.
We have the same birthday, he and I. Different years, of course.
What did I message you on?
Wasn't it?
Yeah, here it is. It's called Black Phone, maybe?
Black Phone.
Look it up on your computer. You have it out.
Beep, boop, bop.
Yeah. Lacey says, it might scare me.
Meaning, like, there's not a lot of scary movies. Yeah, it's called The Black Phone.
I was like, I want to watch this. We should watch this. She's like, it might scare me.
And the Ethan Hawke is called The Grabber, and that's terrifying.
Oh, that sounds like,
Yeah, you're right. It came out in 2021. But
I know.
It's called, the cover of it looks... Cover of it looks super freaky.
So Max's dad came over last night to see Max because he's been out of town. And he says, I saw this movie that made me think like the preview or something. And I was like, what is it? And he told me. And I was like, what are you talking about?
How did I even see that?
I don't know.
I've never heard of this.
Probably some debaucherous place. It's like, so... It looks terrifying.
Yeah, the
overview. If y'all have seen it, please let us
know. Yeah, let us know if it's worth watching.
I'm going to watch it.
It says a shy but clever 13-year-old boy is being held in a soundproof basement by a sadistic mass killer, which freaks me out that it's
okay,
a freaking...
Okay, now never mind. I can't watch it because I can't watch a kid thing.
That's freaky though. I'm like, oh, God. Well, so when a disconnected phone on the wall starts to ring, he soon discovers that he can hear the voices of the murderer's previous victims.
Oh,
and they're trying to
God.
Help him. Isn't that – that's what I said. I'm like, this might scare me. It's like – it sounds like if the room was even worse than it already was.
You know, curiosity is going to get me.
Gosh.
Let me tell you what other movie I tried to watch and had to turn it off.
What?
And it was fucking awful. And if you love this movie
– boy.
Fight me in the comments.
Oh, boy.
It was like – it's the prequel to – it's a Stephen King movie. That the one in the Shining. It's a prequel maybe to The Shining?
Doctor
something. Did you
see
it?
With not Jude. What's his name?
Yeah.
Ewan McGregor?
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah. I didn't like it either.
I turned that shit off.
I did too.
When they held that child down that was walking home from a baseball game, stabbed him in the leg. Mm. So what were they saying? Something about the fear we get the fear. Ugh. We make them panic, and yeah, then we feed off the fear of children. I'm like, that's enough.
I didn't like it either.
Don't love this. Hate this so much. Turning it off.
I didn't watch. I turned it off. I didn't watch it.
Cannot. That's not entertainment to me. That's disgusting. And that says a lot coming from somebody who loves a good demon. it's too realistic. I can't.
I think that's what. Well, even when I was watching the newer It, I think recently, where the kid just brutally attacks that other kid.
No,
for some reason,
can't do a kid on kid. You'll never hear that here, folks. We're not doing kid-on-kid stuff.
I hate that. I'm like, oh, my God. No. Like, and then he, like, stab another kid or something.
Can't do it.
What is this?
Don't crazy love it.
Kids? Where are their parents? I'm yelling, where are their parents? Where are these?
No.
I don't like that. Mm-mm. I don't know.
Not that I love any crimes or any murders. I don't touch that stuff. It makes me nauseated. I hate it. Can't stand it. Don't want to watch a movie about it. Even though I'm curious about this one. I mean, if I turn it on and I watch it and it's like, it's too much, I'm out. I can't.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming to our TED Talk.
Yes. Thank you so much. And where are we next week? I don't even remember.
We are in Florida.
Oh, boy. There's a lot of cases in Florida.
There is a lot going on in Florida, as always.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week.
We'll be back in Florida.
Bye.
Bye.